Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Do you have a will? Have you been through a divorce? Well, these questions are important, and you're going to find out why as we discuss the need for consumers to have more access to the legal system. My guest is Tom Gordon. He's the Executive Director of Consumers for a Responsive Legal System. Tom, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thanks for having me, Shirley.
Now, I know that your organization, you're a nonprofit organization, and you're out there fighting the good fight to give consumers more access to many of the things where we shouldn't have to have a lawyer, but which in the current system we do. So let's talk about some of the things that you've been involved in, your organization, and that specifically has been reflected in some changes in California. Tell us about that.
All right. Well, there's a few things that have been going on in California that are big developments. One of them is that the State Bar of California has been studying the idea of licensing non-lawyer professionals to provide services to people, basically what they call a limited license legal technician, which is a wordy combination. We'd prefer to call it a consumer paralegal. In most cases, there are people out there who are trained as paralegals, but they work directly for lawyers. What California is considering is having these same people who are trained to do a lot of legal tasks that are simpler and that don't require an attorney's expertise. They're considering letting these people be licensed and regulated by the state so that they can provide services directly to consumers.
Well, the advantage to that, as I see it, is that you're going to save a lot of money in legal fees.
Absolutely. I mean, this would save a lot of money if people can provide these services much more cheaply than a lawyer can. They don't have huge law school debt to pay off. They also just, you know, don't have the need to provide extra types of services that are more expensive. There are certain things that are very complicated and require a lawyer's help. Other things, though, like simple document preparation and answers to simple procedural legal questions can be handled by a qualified non-lawyer.
Just helping you through the steps that get you to where you need to go is oftentimes the big stumbling block for a lot of consumers. They don't know where to start. And if they had a non-lawyer that they could approach about this, I think consumers would be much more likely to do a lot of things. For example, in reading some of your literature, I discovered that 200 million people in this country do not have a will. That is appalling. And I suspect that a lot of that has to do with the cost of getting a will written.
Absolutely. People don't know where to get a will written. And if they do, they may not be able to afford a lawyer for it anyway. So there need to be better ways for people to find a lawyer who can do a will for them cheaply, but also more options besides going to a lawyer for a simple document that they may hand over to a paralegal to prepare anyway and then sign off on it.
Mm-hmm. And but yet you end up paying the lawyer's fees. Now, would these people be able to do this without having to work for a lawyer? Would they be able to set up an independent office and perform these services?
That's right. These would be people who, once they pass a licensing exam and meet whatever requirements are set out by the state, would be able to work independently of lawyers. Now, that doesn't mean that they wouldn't maybe have some good referrals with lawyers, so that if they had a more complicated issue, they could bump it up to a lawyer and say, look, I can get 90% of this done for you, but you need to go to a lawyer, and here's some people I can recommend.
Sure, yeah. Well, that makes a whole lot of sense, and that certainly gives consumers more incentive to do some of these things. I mean, for example, I would think in no-fault divorce, if there's not a questions or issues of having to settle an estate or anything like that, I mean, divide an estate in a divorce, it should be easy to get a divorce, but you, in many states, you have to have a lawyer. Isn't that correct?
Well, you're not required to by law. Everybody's allowed to represent themselves in court. But what happens is the procedure can get so complicated
that it
would be useful to have some help. Now, that help doesn't have to be a lawyer, though. Like you said, it could be somebody who's just knowledgeable about the procedure, knowledgeable about the paperwork. And if it's uncontested, really, there's not a lot of legal rights that need the expert protection of a lawyer. You've got basically someone who can guide you through the paperwork and can guide you through the court procedure. So they could help you with doing it on your own or maybe represent you in a process that you just don't understand, but they do.
But now, as it currently stands in most states, that practice is prohibited, isn't it? No one can tell you how to get a divorce, giving you something that isn't really legal advice. Aren't they restricted?
That's right. There's restrictions in every state on what's called the unauthorized practice of law, or UPL. And these UPL restrictions prohibit non-lawyers from doing all sorts of things that lawyers do, not necessarily because they're not competent enough to provide information, but because they're not lawyers and because lawyers do these things. In fact, the definition of unauthorized practice of law has expanded through the years so that anything that lawyers start to take on as part of their business can become part of what's prohibited as unauthorized practice.
Oh, my goodness. Now, there have been some changes in the state of California in terms of the unauthorized practice of law, the limits. There have been limits placed on what the Bar Association there can do. Isn't that correct? I think you all were instrumental in getting Governor Jerry Brown to veto a bill.
That's correct. There was a bill that passed the state legislature that would have provided for enhanced penalties in UPL. Essentially, what it would have done is it would have given the state bar the right to collect attorney's fees if they won in a UPL case. So the state bar could bring a case against somebody, one of their competitors, for engaging in unauthorized practice. And if the state bar won that case, they would not only get whatever damages the court found were appropriate, but they would also collect attorney's fees, which would mean that the person they had just sued would not only be on the hook for the damages, but would have to pay whatever the state bar paid to prosecute them.
Wow, that can get to be really scary for a layperson.
Right, and for people who were in businesses that were totally legal, but were somehow, you know, adjacent to law and adjacent to the legal profession, doing things that were on the borderline of unauthorized practice, but not illegal, these people would have had the threat of losing their businesses and their livelihood.
Well, you could carry it so far that you wouldn't even be able to give advice to people.
Exactly. You couldn't give information. You couldn't point people in the right direction at the courthouse if you take it far enough.
Right.
So these things are really problematic whenever there's expanded UPL. Really, the definition of UPL and unauthorized practice can be so expansive that almost anything can be covered under it. So if you give bar offices, state bars, a motive to go after people even more, such as getting them the ability to win attorney's fees when going after people, you're going to see a lot more prosecutions for it.
Now, I know you're not anti-lawyer because you are a lawyer, mm-hmm. and it's not that. I think you're just looking at the consumer side of this and wanting to make it more accessible so that people can do a lot of things that they don't do like now, right now, like all those wills.
That's right. There's so many things that consumers need that they're not getting the legal help for. And there's not even enough lawyers out there to provide all the services that are needed. If you look at, for instance, divorces, there's, you know, millions of people who get divorced. There's not enough lawyers with expertise in family law and divorce law to handle all of those cases. Every lawyer who practices in that area would have to take on many more clients than they would possibly be able to handle in order to meet that caseload.
Now, I know that, for example, I think the state of Florida, which seems to be very protective of lawyers, I don't know how recent it was, but they've sued paralegals, for example, for unauthorized practice of law. I mean, they've sued people in Florida, and I'm sure they've done it in other states as well.
Right. This happens anytime somebody is basically threatening the livelihood of lawyers who, by providing these services. So consumers benefit when non-lawyers can provide services to people. But some lawyers, not the ones who are providing added value, but lawyers who are just, the ones who are hanging on because they have a monopoly license to practice law and other people don't, those people feel threatened. And so they will sue often to get these other people to stop providing services to consumers.
To being a competitor. Well, let's just take a brief pause here to let people know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Tom Gordon. He's the Executive Director of Consumers for a Responsive Legal System. And we call it Responsible Law, right?
Responsive Law, yes.
Responsive Law. And your website is, what is your website?
Our website is responsivelaw.org.
Responsivelaw.org. And you have a lot of interesting information on your website.
Yes, we have information about all of the policy work we do. So you can find out more about what we did in California to get Governor Brown to veto that bill that would have been disastrous to consumers. You can find out about our testimony in front of the American Bar Association when they've considered changes to the rules governing lawyers. And you can find a lot of information that will help you if you're looking to hire a lawyer. How do you find a lawyer and how do you go about making sure that the lawyer and you are on the same page?
Oh, you must have known what I was thinking about because I wanted to talk to you about having a contract with your lawyer, because a lawyer would tell you to get a contract if you were doing with a builder. So maybe we should talk about how you go about getting a contract with a lawyer so you know everything that's going to be done and legal fees are specified and so on.
Mm-hmm. That's right. One thing, this is something that benefits the client. And if your lawyer is not willing to put their information about the agreement with you in writing, you should find another lawyer. Like you said, any lawyer that you went to talk about your contract with a builder or with a doctor or with anybody else you might be hiring. They'd say, get your contract in writing, get all the fees in writing, get the conditions in writing. So if a lawyer won't do that for their own practice, it's time to find somebody else.
Well, and it's important, too. On behalf of my brother, I was involved in some legal issues. I was appalled at how fast the bills can run up from telephone conversations, documents, getting letters written. I mean, it's amazing how fast these fees run up. And if there were a number of things that if we'd have been able to get someone like a paralegal to help us, it would have probably made a significant difference.
Right. And there's some things that people can do about that. You may not be able to get a non-lawyer to help you with parts of your case, but what you can do is you can ask your lawyer if they'll be willing to unbundle their services.
Sure.
Much like, you know, in cable, we talk about unbundling and getting some of the channels, but not all the channels. You don't need all the channels. You may
right.
only want ESPN and you don't want the cooking network.
Right.
So in law, there's a growing movement for lawyers to unbundle their services and say, so a lawyer could say, look, I'll go represent you in court, but you can prepare the documents and maybe I'll review them. But that way you can do part of the work on your own and save money. And the lawyer can do the parts that are where they're most needed.
Do you get much pushback from bar associations with the things that you're doing?
For things like unbundling, there's actually a great deal of support. What lawyers are looking for is clarification that they're allowed to do this. Lawyers are afraid that they're going to get sucked into your entire case when they just signed up to do a part of it.
I see.
And so we advocate for rules in the states that say, look, this is how a lawyer can unbundle their services. Here's the steps they go through that will protect both them and the consumer.
Sure.
So that the consumer can get a better deal on the legal help they need the most. And the lawyer is protected so that they'll feel more free to offer those services.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I'll tell you, it is amazing what legal fees can run up. And you don't want to have to do that. You don't want to do that unless you have to. And so if there were ways for consumers to find access without having to go through the entire legal system, it would be very, very useful. So back to this contract, you should ask for it to specify exactly what's going to be done, what it's going to cost you, how much it's going to cost if you make a phone call, how they charge that phone call. Do they charge it in 15-minute increments or whatever? I would think those are all extremely valid questions.
They are, and those should all be covered. You can also ask that you be notified after a certain amount of bills have been rung up.
Good
so
idea.
That you don't find that all of a sudden a $5,000 retainer has disappeared. If you want to be notified every $1,000, a lawyer should
yes.
be amenable to that
yes.
so that you know what's being billed. And if you want to be billed more frequently, maybe the lawyer bills monthly, but you'd like to know weekly what's going on if you've got a case that's particularly active.
How much are you entitled to in terms of a breakdown of what they're doing?
Well, really, you're entitled to whatever you ask for.
Okay.
There's very little in terms of law about what the lawyer is required to put in writing. In just about every state, there's no requirement that a lawyer puts their agreement in writing. Actually, we did push successfully to get Massachusetts to adopt a law that says that fee agreements have to be put in writing for new clients. But other than that, that's not a law that exists anywhere. But that doesn't mean you can't assert your rights as a consumer
sure.
to shop around and find an attorney who will be willing to work with you on that.
Exactly. And I think that's the important thing, isn't it? I think most of us feel like we're just not – we're hesitant. We're kind of concerned. I mean, you don't consult a lawyer that often, and you don't feel like it's a level playing field because you don't really quite know how the whole system works. Does that make sense?
Right. And the thing to know is that a good lawyer will be happy to put all these things in writing and wants to have these things cleared up ahead of time because the lawyer doesn't want a fee dispute any more than you do.
Sure.
The more that this is solidly in writing and is clear to both parties, the better off both of them will be. So don't be afraid to ask your lawyer for this. Many lawyers will give it to you anyway, but if you ask, they'll usually be happy to give if they're a lawyer worth hiring.
Well, now, what about these legal documents that you see on TV, like how to do a will or how to incorporate your business? Are they ever concerned about practicing law without a license? I mean, some of them say this, we're not a law firm.
Right, and they're not. I mean, well, there's all sorts of different types of services out there, but there's one type of service is companies like LegalZoom that will do a fill-in-the-blank document. They don't have lawyers filling out those documents. That's the same sort of thing that happens as if you use TurboTax for your taxes.
Okay.
So there's not a lawyer who's filling out the document for you. It's the same sort of thing you do with your taxes where you answer a questionnaire and then it fills out the form for you. But that's something that can be very helpful to a consumer
sure.
to have that service that costs a lot less than a lawyer and prepares a valid document for you.
Okay. So do lawyers complain about that kind of service, though?
Some of them certainly do. But again, that's something where if you're providing more than just filling out a document, if you're a lawyer, you should be able to provide more services than that.
Sure.
If you're just filling out a document, then you really have no grounds to complain.
Right. Exactly. All right. Now, then let's talk about complaining about a lawyer. Is there a valid process that you can go through if you think you have really been misrepresented, ripped off, or whatever by a lawyer?
Mm-hmm. There's a few things you can do if you've had a problem with your lawyer. First, of course, you want to try and resolve things with the lawyer before you go reporting them to somebody. And so, you know, putting your complaint in writing to a lawyer, if you've had a series of problems with them, always, you know, put your complaint in writing when dealing with them and let them know that this is, you know, if you've had several problems that you've talked with them about on the phone, put them all in writing, send it in a letter to the lawyer, and just note that this is a recap of problems you've already talked about.
So but it's really, really the important thing that I hear you saying is that you need to keep notes of everything that's happening from the get-go. Whether you think you're going to have a problem or not, you need to make a complete record of conversations, of what transpired and when. Would that be accurate?
Well, you don't need to go quite to that extent, but getting a fee agreement and a contract with your lawyer in writing would help because then you know what the terms were.
Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Tom Gordon. He's the executive director of the Consumers for a Responsive Legal System, and their website is responsivelaw.org. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Oh, good. Pass that one. Okay, so let's go back and just pick up on this how you document a case. And I'm not saying that you have to be record minutia, but it seems to me like it's a good idea for a consumer as they're dealing with any professional to make notes of the day something transpires, the day you had the conversation, et cetera.
Right. Certainly anytime you note a problem with your lawyer, make a note of it. Hopefully it turns into nothing and it's just something that is a small problem that doesn't become a big issue. But if it does become a big issue, you want to keep track of it. And you're right. Mm-hmm. That's something you should do with any service professional.
Sure.
Is take notes on problems with the relationship in case it blows up into something bigger.
Right.
But if you...
I've been working with a landscaper who has been just absolutely fabulous. But I make notes of the things that have gone on only because, first off, I want a record of all those plants and things. but secondly, too, because to refresh my mind about what transpired is next year, I'm looking at those plants and thinking, what are they? So, you know, this is not something that is a legal issue, but it's just something that, for me, it's important to keep a record of what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so similarly, it's important to keep a record of your relationship
exactly.
with your lawyer.
Exactly. The same kind of thing. Just whatever transpires and it's little notes. It can be a little bit of a journal that you keep. And that to me is very helpful because then you go back and you forget things. You forget something that was not important at the time, but maybe significant later, whatever. All right. Let's talk about the one thing that there have been some small changes, and that is small claims court.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, small claims court is
small changes. Small claims.
Small claims court is the one place that is at least supposed to be a place where people can resolve their disputes without a lawyer. They're supposed to be designed.
First, it's call for action, and then if that doesn't work,
right? Call for action is another great place to resolve your disputes before you even have to get to small claims
That's
court.
That's exactly right.
But if you don't get a resolution through other means, then going to small claims court can be a good way to. Resolve a dispute with a contractor or a landlord or a tenant, and it's at least supposed to be designed so that people can use it without a lawyer. Now, that being said, some of them are a little more complicated than that, so it's important to study up before you go in on what the process is going to be if you go to small claims court. And each state has a different process for filing a form to bring a suit or how to respond to that. Most states, though, have a pretty good website that explains what that process is for their particular small claims court.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've never followed anything in small claims court, but I know people who have, and they said that that they found that the clerk of the court was very helpful in telling them what they needed to do, and then there comes the bigger issue: you win in small claims court, and how do you collect?
Right, that's a huge issue in small claims.
Right.
Is that you may walk away and have the judge bang her gavel and say judgment in the amount of $7,200 for Shirley Rooker, and you think, great, I I'm going to get my money back. And then you walk out of court and you realize all you have is a piece of paper that says you are owed $7,200. You won a judgment.
I was owed that before.
Right. Now it just says that the court approves that. The court agrees and you're legally owed it, as opposed to just you believing that you were owed it.
Right.
But you still have to get that money from the person who you sued.
So you have to go through another process to get that down, right?
So there's another process. And one of the things we advocate is that that be more streamlined, so that when it's possible, that process of finding out where the other party, which is called the judgment debtor, that's a fancy legal term for the person who you sued and won money from, so that that judgment debtor has to tell you where their bank accounts are, where they work, and you know where they, if they own their home, where their home is, so that you can go about getting those assets if you need to, if they don't pay you.
Well, now, you said $7,500. That might be possible in some states, but it's not possible in all states, is it?
Right. No, it's not. And, you know, around here in the D.C. area, the most you can sue for in small claims court is $5,000. So,
which is excuse me, but that's disgusting.
Right.
Today's there's nothing you get done for $5,000.
Right. And the other problem with that is not only is it handling such a small percentage of the problems that people have on an everyday basis, but cases bigger than that. If you have a case for $6,000 or $7,000, say, in D.C., you have to go into the regular superior court. So that's going
to
require
a
lawyer.
And usually you have to
have a lawyer, right? And a lawyer is going to cost you more than the $7,000 that you're going to win if you win your case.
Right. Now, there has been – some states have raised – I think, what is it, Georgia has one of the highest small claims courts.
Right. Georgia's limit is, I believe, $15,000. Tennessee, actually, in parts of the state, it's either $15,000 or in some counties, $25,000.
Oh, I love it.
And that's really where the amount should be. In small claims court,
they
should have a dollar limit of $25,000 so that you can bring in a case that's not big enough for a lawyer in small claims court. Any bigger than that, you get into the area where it makes sense to
Of course, you need to protect yourself. You don't want to go to court just for huge amounts of money. But in so many cases where there's something that's a fairly clear-cut issue, small claims court would be the perfect place. We see this a lot with consumers who have significant problems, significant complaints against a business, for example, involving a fairly large sum of money, and like particularly in building issues, building contractors. And I'm not picking on you building contractors, but there's some that are not very good, and there are some that are great. But so that they oftentimes they have to hire a lawyer if they're like $15,000 or $20,000 dispute. They're not going to be able to get that resolved. Sometimes you can if it's a licensed person through the state, but it depends on where you live entirely. But just giving that as an example, in any state, you should be able to find some way to settle that without having to get a lawyer, because the lawyer is not going to want to take a case that small.
Right, absolutely. And the bigger problem comes when you know, when there are those bad apples out there who know very well what the small claims limit is for that state. And so they know that if they rip you off for $20,000, that you're not going to be able to get that money back without hiring a lawyer.
That's right. That is so true. But there are some states that I know, for example, in Maryland, if it's a home improvement kind of thing, they have a home improvement commission that you can file a complaint through. But that doesn't always mean you're going to get your money back. And there, I think, are limits on that as well. But at any rate, lots of interesting things going on that I'm hearing from you, Tom. Where are you going next? We only have about a minute, so give me a short answer.
Sure. We are working across the country. One of the things I'd love to come back and talk about sometime is ways to get more mass market legal services available. So you have your H&R Blocks out there for tax and accounting problems. We need the same sort of thing for lawyers. And that's an issue that will take much more than the 30 seconds we have left.
But okay.
As one of the things we're working on in the coming year.
So that would, in fact, provide more legal services, probably at a more reasonable rate than someone who has to go into private practice and try to keep an office sustained and so on.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, we've covered it. Thank you so much, Tom. You've been listening to Off Consuming Interest. My guest has been Tom Gordon, Executive Director of Consumers for a Responsive Legal System. Their website is responsivelaw.org. I am Shirley Rooker. You're listening to us right here on 1500 AM. We're so glad you joined us. Thank you.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.